Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the V2V podcast, where your voices are heard, your stories are told, and your hearts can begin to heal. I'm your host, Dr. Marcy, America's Voice for the Voiceless. And just in case this is your first time tuning in, I want to assure you that this is a safe space for you to bring your whole authentic self to. And each week when we get together, we discuss a variety of critical life topics, and you can always count on some transparent dialogue and some sometimes uncomfortable conversations. But it's always my sincerest wish that no matter what, what's shared here will inspire you to grow through your discomfort. And it's always our intention that something that you hear on the show, either from myself or from our guests each week, will empower you to begin to make sustainable changes in your own life and relationships. As always, I ask that God use us to have the conversation that you need to hear, and I thank Him for the voice, the platform, and the opportunity to become a conduit for healing. As a reminder, we are live and the phone lines are open tonight. So we welcome your comments and your questions for either myself or tonight's guest. That number, if you want to call in, is 914-219-0880, and they will remain open for the duration of the show. Again, that number is 914-219-0880. So, oh, boy, tonight, man, listen, I sometimes wonder how it just keeps getting bigger and better every single week, and tonight's guest is literally one of my personal favorite human beings. He's a longtime member of my personal board of directors. He's a mentor, he's a colleague, and most of all, he's a great friend. But beyond that, tonight's guest, Dr. Will Moreland, is a military veteran turned entrepreneur. As the founder of several successful companies, he's traveled the world to impact, inspire, and influence leaders at all levels. As a professional speaker and business coach, Dr. Will has been named a top speaker in America and named Business Person of the Year by a community organization 5 different times. He's a respected global leader, the author of over 50 books, and Dr. Will has worked with organizations, associations, and governments in over 50 countries on 5 continents. As a founder of Genius Speakers Academy, he supports hundreds of speakers each year to build their brand, business, and their bank accounts. And his passion is to see individuals excel and succeed in life and business. And I can testify to you guys, it is absolutely unmatched. Dr. Will, are you there?
I am here. Very excited to be here with your audience tonight. Thank you so much for having me.
No, thank you. And what we didn't talk about in your bio, because it's new, is your latest accomplishment as of today, fresh hot off the press, brand new press release just dropped, that you were named a Phoenix Titan of Industry and awarded a Titan 100 Award for 2022. And for those of you who are unfamiliar, the Titan 100 program recognizes the top 100 CEOs and C-suite level executives in the Phoenix metropolitan market. And to understand that, you have to remember that Phoenix is the 5th largest city in the country. So when you talk about the top executives, top 100 executives of industry in Phoenix, the 5th largest country, and Dr. Will was just inducted into that prestigious group of executives. Congratulations, my friend. How's that feel?
I appreciate that. It really is surreal when you think about, you know, summarizing what you just said, Phoenix being the 5th largest city in America, and then all the great companies that we have and all the great leaders that we have here in Phoenix and the surrounding areas to be named, you know, in the top 100 really is something amazing. And I know it sounds cliche when people say you don't do it for the awards, you don't do it for the accolades. I truly do it for the love of helping and inspiring other people. But whenever you can get recognized at that level, it really is something special. And as I get older in life, I understand the importance of slowing down and smelling the roses. So this is huge. I'm not going to make the mistake of downplaying it. It is a great and huge honor, and I'm just elated to be recognized by the Titan 100.
Absolutely. And, you know, I've worked with you for a number of years, and you were the catalyst of me really, truly taking a full dive into entrepreneurship. You were the catalyst for me to write my first book, and have been so critical to many of the decisions that I've personally made in my life and my relationships and my business endeavors. And the work that you do with other entrepreneurs and global leaders around the country, I mean, you're an ambassador of civility, and I mean, just so many things that your bio, I mean, we'd be here all night just talking about your bio, but congratulations. It's wonderful to watch. It's wonderful to sit with you through this process. I'm excited about it, and I'm so proud of you and everything that you do. So, absolutely. Tonight, though, I want to give my audience a little dose of the sauce that I get and that the people who work with you in Genius Speakers Academy and the companies that book you through Moreland Training and Associates to do diversity speaking and so forth. I want them to get a feel for who you are and to understand. We titled tonight's show Defying the Odds, and we're talking about the expectations for young Black boys. I know little bits of your story. I know a lot of your story, but particularly boys born to single mothers in systems of poverty. And a lot of times the expectation is very low, if at all, but mostly it's death or jail. And you didn't succumb to those outside expectations, and you've truly blazed your own trail all around the world. So can you take everybody who's not familiar with you kind of back on those how you started, where you started from?
Certainly. So from day number one, the genesis of Will Moreland, I started out being a fighter. The day I was born, I was born with complications. I wasn't breathing. And so immediately from the small hospital my mom had me in, they had to helicopter me to a larger hospital that had facilities to deal with what I was dealing with and the complications of my birth. And so for the first 2 months of my life, I was in the care unit for infants, and they told my mom that I had a 40% chance of living. And I remember my mom telling me the story that my grandmother came to see me, and she saw me with all the little medical devices hooked up to me and my little chest breathing, and she turned to my mother and she says, "He's a fighter." And so from my earliest remembrance from the situation of being born in Compton, California, which they said at the time was the worst city in America, being surrounded in an environment with gangs and drugs, I had to fight. And so I've always considered myself against all the odds, as you would say, always trying to better myself and come out of difficult situations that society had produced and some situations I induced on my own self. And so I was fortunate, not to make a long story longer, but I was fortunate at the age of 19 to have what I call my first disruptor enter into my life in a big way. And this disruptor was a California state judge who looked at me. I had recently been arrested, and he looked at me and he said, "Mr. Moreland, you're headed nowhere fast. I'm going to give you an opportunity. I'm going to give you an opportunity to leave my courtroom And in 2 weeks, I want you to return, and I want you to tell me what you're going to do with your life. And I left that courtroom not really knowing what I was going to do. And 2 weeks passed by, and I met my, who I consider my second disruptor, a gentleman by the name of Corey Oliver, who was a Army recruiter. As I was walking in the mall, for those of you that are familiar with Southern California, Hawthorne, California, they had a mall right there in Hawthorne, California. I was walking in that mall, and Corey came up to me, and he asked me a question that would forever change my life. He said, "Have you ever thought about joining the military?" And up until that time, I had never thought about it. I even remember laughing at the idea when the Army recruiters would come to our school and talk to us about it. But that particular day, something just clicked, and I said, this would probably be a good answer to give to the judge when I go back that I'm going to the Army. And so I told Corey that day I was willing to join the Army. He looked at me as just as surprised as he could ever be. And that day I ended up signing up for the military, which turned out to be one of the best choices in my life. I was able to go back to that judge, let him know I'm going to the Army, started my military career. And just to give people a picture of this, when I joined the military, this was the very first time I would be leaving California. I hadn't traveled more than 20 miles in my whole life, in my whole 19 years. I hadn't traveled more than 20 miles outside of Compton, California. So the box that I grew up in was a very, you know, shallow box in my community. I just knew my community, knew the people in my community. So to be able to get on a plane, to be able to go to a brand new state, and then eventually I was stationed in Germany. So to end up in a whole new country. So imagine a kid that's lived in this box for 19 years, and then now he's getting shipped to a whole new country. It was a big culture shock for me.
Yeah, I can't even imagine. As many times as I've heard you recant that story, one of the things that always jumps out to me, you always use the word disruptors. And I know you, parts of the story that you didn't share was some in through before you got to that judge's courtroom. Can you highlight just a couple of those? And then I want to talk a little bit about disruptors and why that's such an important tool.
Yeah, so all of us are shaped by three things mainly: our environment, our teachers, and our experiences. So if you can imagine growing up for all of us, when you think about those that are instrumental in your life, when we talk about your parents, when you talk about your teachers, that could be your clergy. These are your first teachers. Your first role models, and then you think about the environment. Wherever you know, if you grew up in farmland, then you grew up around cows, and that was the exposure you had. Well, I grew up in, as I said earlier, in Compton, and we were surrounded. I say it was the tale of two cities. I say this because, to be honest with you, growing up in Compton, I didn't know Compton was bad. Compton just happened to be my home, and all the things that were going on inside of that environment was just going on in that environment. It was normal to us. So it didn't seem that all the gunshots didn't seem bad. It's just that's what happened in our neighborhood. Fights didn't seem bad. That's just what happened in our neighborhood. But then inside of my house, growing up with my mom and my grandmother, I was loved. I got the attention that I needed, things like that. And so it was the tale of two cities. It was the best of times and the worst of times. Inside of, you know, my house from my grandmother, I was getting structure. I was getting love. She was establishing my faith and all that type of stuff. And so for me, I didn't realize the perception that Compton had until I left Compton, and I would tell people I was from Compton, and they would always gasp and be like, "Compton, you grew up in Compton. Oh my God." And so growing up in that environment, the things that happened, I can remember, you know, at my earliest age, I saw my first dead body at the age of 7. My best friend was killed in front of me at the age of 16. As I alluded to earlier, I was in and out of jail. I ended up joining a gang. I sold drugs, just all a part of being a part of that environment. We just did what we saw. And that's why exposure is so important. And I'm sure we'll talk about that later. But I just became what I saw. What I repeatedly saw when I walked out of my house, I just became that. And so I became a fabric of that. And it at the time didn't seem like a big deal because everybody else in my neighborhood was doing the same thing. And so you're not made aware that something is different until you see different. And so everybody that lived in my neighborhood, we shopped at the same stores, we did the same things, we listened to the same music. So none of it seemed off until I joined the military and I started to hear about other people's experience. I realized that every young black male didn't have the same experiences as me. I met people from Florida who would go fishing every weekend. I met people from North Carolina who would go and look at NASCAR races. I met people from Colorado who would go skiing, experiences that I had never had. I had never heard about it, had never been exposed to it.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like you said, you didn't know Compton was bad. And one of the things when we talk about those generational systems that we're born into is that a lot of times we don't know that our environment or our system is corrupt or that it's bad or that there's something negative. It's our normal, and chaos becomes normal if you sit in it long enough. But I want to go back to the term disruptor, and will you break down for the listeners kind of what that is and the significance of having disruptors in your life?
Certainly. So all of us are telling ourselves a story. Every single day we're telling ourselves a story, and this story is doing one thing. It's either building us up or it's breaking us down. It's either building us up or breaking us down. And so for me, I was telling myself a story every day that, man, you're a young black male, you're in the inner city, no one cares about you, you'll probably be dead by the time you're 18 or you'll probably be in jail. And so when it came to planning for my life, I never thought about planning for my life because I didn't think I was going to have a life to plan for. So this was the story that I was telling myself. And so when I talk about a disruptor, whenever you're telling yourself a story like this that's breaking you down, you need a disruptor to come in and break that pattern of thinking. You need a disruptor to break that pattern of thinking and give you something else. And so it's like anybody that's an addict, they always say to break that, you have to now substitute. So if a person is a smoker, if they want to stop smoking, well, when they would go out and take that 15-minute break, they need something to disrupt that. They need something to replace that. So when I used to smoke, what am I going to do now? A person who's trying to change their eating habits. Okay, I used to come home every day, grab me a pack of cookies, sit on the couch and start eating. What am I going to do to disrupt that? And so we have individuals that can disrupt those patterns, and then we have habits that can disrupt those patterns. And so for me, the judge as a disruptor, he was telling me, listen, you're getting ready to mess up your life. You need to do something different. When Corey came up to me, Corey was the disruptor to say, here is the pathway that's going to help you transform your life. Here's the pathway. Here's a situation you can involve yourself in. So instead of hanging out in the streets, you can be in the United States military. And what I found out over the years, for people who want to transform their life, there's four key critical elements that need to take place. Number one, I call them the four P's of transformation. And number one is the first P is you got to change the places you're going. You got to change the places you're going. So if you're hanging out in places of destruction, meaning things that are not building you up, things that are not making you better, you need to change those places. So for me at that time, I was hanging out at the park. I was hanging out with the wrong types of individuals, so I had to change the place I was going. So instead of going to the park, now I was going to the military. That leads us into the second P. When you change the places you go, you start to change the people that you're hanging around. And everyone's heard that adage, birds of a feather flock together. You may have heard that you're going to be the sum total of the five people that you hang out the most with. And so once you change the places you go, now you've changed the people you begin to interact with. Once you change the people you interact with, now you begin to change your philosophy. Your mindset begins to change because the conversations that you're having. So when I was on the streets and when I was on the block, the conversation was, what do I have to live for? So when you have an attitude of what do I have to live for, I have nothing to lose, then you're willing to do any and everything because you really don't care about life. But now that I'm now in the military and people are asking me, well, where do you see yourself in 5 years? What is your future going to look like? The conversation is different. And now because the conversation is different, my philosophy, it wasn't me against the world now. It was the world as my oyster. Now I could be anything I wanted to be. And then the fourth thing is your practices. Now that you have these new environments, places, now that you have these new people, now that you have this new philosophy, this is what helps shape your daily practices, or another word for practices is habits, because your results are going to be a result of your habits. And so in incorporating the four P's into your life, you're going to see amazing transformation when you have different places. You're going to the library, you're going to networking events, you're hanging around different places that are going to benefit you now. You're hanging out with better quality people, and now your philosophy, the way you think, as a man thinketh, so is he, and then your practices, what you're doing on a daily basis, begin to change. You're going to have radical transformation in your life.
Yeah, and it's been a while since I've heard you talk about those four P's, but I remember when I first met you and I attended a branding seminar that you held years and years ago, almost 10 years ago now, and I was just so awestruck at your ability to break down things and concepts and things like that to make it easy to understand. Because to your point, the story that I was telling myself about starting my business was that I didn't know anything about entrepreneurship, that I wasn't really capable. I was really stuck on whether or not I had the qualifications to do some of the things that I wanted to do. I always had the heart to serve, but I was telling myself a different story about my abilities. And the same thing happened when you prompted me, I'm going to just use that word, to write my first book. I mean, I procrastinated. I don't even know if you know this, but I procrastinated for months. I didn't even start the book until January. And I had committed to you at some point along the line that I would have the book to you by February 14th. But the story I was telling myself was, I'm not a writer. I'm not an author. I can't do this. And so really understanding that shift in mindset and how important that is, really, really, there's so many testimonies that I personally have, and I know that you have many of them too, about the power of the mind, and like you said, as a man thinketh, and how when you start hanging around different people and you start doing different things and the conversation shift. And, you know, for those of you who are listening, I hope you wrote those things down. I'll repeat them for you here in a little bit, but they're life-changing if you put them into practice. And it's just like with anything else, if you have the information but you don't use it, it does you no good. You may as well have even gotten the information. One of the other things you talked about, Doc, was let me stick with the disruptor for a second, because I know from hearing you tell this story over the years, when you went to the military, talk and explain what that – so you got the disruptor from the judge, you got the disruptor from Corey, you joined the military, and you end up in Germany after you did your basic. You get deployed to Germany. Talk about what your mindset was when you got to Germany and how that could have changed the game for you.
Well, physically, I was 3,000 or 8,000 miles away from Compton, California, where I grew up physically. But mentally, I was still in Compton. So physically, I was in Germany. Mentally, I was still in Compton, meaning the way I looked at life, the way I approached life, the way I handled certain situations. And so one familiar situation that brings me to my third and one of my most important disruptors was within 2 months of being at my first duty station, I was going to get kicked out of the Army for fighting because, once again, I was physically 8,000 miles away, but mentally I was still in Compton. And so when I had this confrontation with this particular gentleman, I was handling it like I was still in Compton, and the only way I knew how to handle it was to fight. And so I didn't know that you could conversate and you could come to, come to an agreement and just walk away as two men. I didn't know that. I didn't know that was possible because in the environment that I grew up in, the way you settle things, the way you handle things, the way you determined who was right and who was wrong, it was by fighting. And so this fight led me to get in trouble. I'm getting ready to get kicked out of the Army. And then I meet my third disruptor, a gentleman by the name of Command Sergeant Major Babs. And he was, if you're familiar with the military, he was the highest ranking non-commissioned officer on the post. And he had read my record, and he comes and talks to me. He says, okay, listen, they want me to kick you out. If I kick you out, you're going right back to Compton. I know about Compton. So tell me, what are you going to do if I kick you out? What are you going to do except end up in jail or dead? He says, this is what I'm going to do for you. He's getting ready to disrupt. He says, I'm going to have you come work directly for me. And he allowed me to come work directly for him. And now he asks me the next powerful question that changes my life. Corey asked me if I had ever thought about joining the Army. Command Sergeant Babs asked me, he says, where do you see yourself in 5 years? Now, no one had ever asked me that question in my 19 years of living because everybody expected by the time I was 18, I would either be in jail or I'd be dead. So no one ever asked me to do any life planning. No one had ever talked to me about vision or goals or anything like that. But Command Sergeant Major Babs, he says, where do you see yourself in 5 years? I said, Sergeant Major, I don't know where I see myself. He says, I want you to go home this weekend, and on Monday, I want you to tell me where you see yourself in 5 years. So that Monday, I come back, and we have a discussion, and I said, well, at this point, I just know I want to be a good soldier, and I want to get into school. I wanted to get into college, and I want to go after a degree. He says, well, I can help you with both of those. And he began to set up mentors for me to help me in that direction of becoming a better soldier and also getting my college education. And so once again, here's this disruptor. Even though I was in the Army, I still wasn't life planning. I was still thinking, you know, taking it one day at a time. But here's this disruptor saying, no, you're going to live a long life. And if you're going to live a long life, you need to plan for living a long life. And he's the one that got me into vision casting, and he's the one that got me into goal setting, and he's the one that got me into really forecasting for my future.
So we've got disruptors, we've got exposure, we've got expectations, and all of those things have to come together at some point. They have to join together at some point because, like you just pointed out, a lot of times people think, oh, well, if I just stop hanging around, you know, this person, or if I move to another city, but exactly what you're saying about moving, you know, you moved to Germany, I moved from Iowa to Arizona, but when I got to Arizona, my mindset was still this 400-pound woman that I had left back in Iowa. I had lost about 150 pounds at that point. But mentally, I still made decisions and made relationship choices and all kinds of things based on the mindset and the expectations that I had of myself when I was in Iowa and I was 386 pounds. but here I am in Arizona, and I have to do things differently. So a lot of people get stuck in that. They think, well, this is where I'm at, and I don't have these disruptors that he's talking about, and I can't leave my environment that I'm in. I'm stuck here. What do you say to those people that are coming up with all these reasons why they can't grow and succeed? Because obviously you've proven that you can.
So we have enough evidence now. We have enough evidence that transformation is possible for the willing. It's possible for the willing. But I admit and I acknowledge that transforming your life and transforming your mindset is going to be the most difficult undertaking that you could ever imagine. And so when we talk about reprogramming, there has to be a reprogramming. And so it's not enough, like you said, you moved from Iowa to Arizona, I moved from Compton to Germany, but our minds wasn't transformed. And so there has to be a reprogramming, meaning you have to put new information to replace the old information. So it's not good enough to just say, you know what, I'm not going to eat those cookies. If you haven't replaced those cookies with carrots and celery and healthy snacks, because you're going to revert back. There's a proverb that says the dog always returns to his vomit, right? And so you have to now reprogram yourself. So for me, the way the process looked when I got on this transformation journey, I had 19 years worth of programming, how I handled certain situations, how I thought about myself, how I viewed myself, how I viewed the world. And so I had to now reprogram myself. And one of the things that I did was I ended up reading in a 5 to 6 year period of time. I ended up reading like 700 books, personal development books, the psychology of success. And one of the earlier books that I read was a book by the name of Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. And for those of you that are not familiar with this book, I would really suggest that you read it. It's a book that talks about the principles of success. And one of the most exciting things that I discovered in the book Think and Grow Rich was that literally no matter where I started from, no matter what situation you were in, you had this powerful tool called choice, and you could make a choice no matter where you started from, no matter what your environment was, that you could make a choice that your life is going to be different. And so when you ask me, what can people do? The first thing they have to do is, number one, make that choice of saying my life is going to be different. And then the second thing they have to do is commit to being different. Now, notice I did not say you had to know how your life was going to change. I did not say you had to know how everything was going to come, but you do have to make the choice to say, you know what, I'm not going to just be a ex-gangbanger, an ex-drug dealer for the rest of my life. That was a part of my story, but what's going to be chapter two? What's going to be chapter three? We're getting ready to turn the page. And so I had to make a commitment to becoming a different individual. And so for me, the way it worked for me, I ended up having to find a model, something, someone to model. And my model ended up being a gentleman by the name of Reginald F. Lewis, who was an African-American man who happened to be the first African-American to buy a billion-dollar company. And when I read his book, I now had a picture. I had imagery of someone who looked like me, talked like me, came from similar circumstances as me, being successful. And I began to model my life. I read his book. In his book, he had a description of his daily schedule, how early he woke up in the morning, the books he was reading, the types of things that he was doing. And when I saw that, I now had the blueprint of how to transform my life. And I just began to model everything that he, as much as possible, I began to model what he did. And here's the thing. you don't have to be a farmer to get a harvest. You just have to do what farmers do, meaning plant the seed, water the seed, shoo away all the crows that try to get your seed. You know, now when I'm talking to my clients, I call it the Betty Crocker. If you go into any store literally around the world, and I've done this to make sure it's true, when you go and pick up a box of Betty Crocker, Betty Crocker is so confident in her recipe that she lets you know you don't have to go to culinary art school. All you need to do is follow this recipe. And I've checked the stores literally all around the world because I wanted to see, man, you know what? Is it going to be different when I go into a Germany store? Is it going to be different when I go into Ghana? Is it going to be different? Is the recipe going to be different when I go to India? Is it going to be different when I go to St. Martin? Is it going to be different when I go to Italy? Nope, sure enough, every time I picked up a Betty Crocker, it's 2 eggs, a stick of butter, a half a cup of milk. You stir it all up. It's going to be a little lumpy. Preheat the oven to 350. Grease the pan. Get you a nonstick pan. Pour the batter in the pan. Put the pan in the oven at 350. And then she says it'll take 15 to 25 minutes. And she can't give you an exact pinpoint time. The cake is going to be ready. But she says between 15 and 25 minutes. And the reason why she says that is she says ovens vary. What does that mean for me and you? That means each of us, our discipline, our will, circumstances in our life are all going to be different that keeps us from doing what we need to do to create the success we want in our life. And so for some people listening to us tonight, they're going to take the 4 P's of transformation, and they're going to immediately start the transformation journey. Somebody else is going to listen to us, and they're going to say, "Nah, you don't know my life, Doc. You don't know what I've been through. That's all cute for you, but, man, there's no way that stuff will work for me." Then there's going to be somebody who will listen to this podcast 5 years from now and get the recipe and say, "Man, I'm about to try this out because this guy said if I did the 4 P's of transformation that my life will begin to change." And so she says ovens vary, and that's what I found out in life, that, you know, everybody's going to listen to the same information, but we're all going to approach it totally different. And so if you're listening to us tonight, I want to act as a bridge. I want to act as a catalyst. You may not know me personally, but I want to act as a catalyst to let you know I don't care where you come from. You can be like me and originate from the worst city in America, teenage mother, fighting for my life, growing up in, you know, adverse situations. But because I begin to make different choices in my life is extremely different than it was when I grew up.
I love that. We're going to go on a quick break, but before we go to break, I want to repeat those 4 P's of transformation. They are, 1, changing the places that you go. 2, changing the people who are around you. 3, changing your philosophies. Basically what he said was if the people around you change, the conversations are going to change. Therefore, your mindset has to shift. Like, you have to get on board. It's almost not even possible to hold on to the same mindset with if you've done those first 2 things. And then finally, he said the 4th P was changing your practices, changing what you do every day, altering your habits. Some of you follow me, and you know I've been on this challenge to change journey, trying to lose 40 pounds that I gained back. And so I had to, 26 days ago, alter my practices. Like, all those other things weren't the issue, but my practices, my day-to-day habits, what I was doing, how I was living, the things I was eating, the choices I was making as far as exercise had to shift. So those are the 4 P's, your places, your people, your philosophy, and your practices. And then when we come back, Doc, you've talked a lot about the stories that we tell ourselves, and so I want to dive into one of the things I always say is you control the narrative, and I know you've got some thoughts on that, so I want to talk about that when we come back. DMJ! I got it, I got it. We got it, we
never alone. I can go to the throne. He's right beside me. Hold my hand in a valley. Life a knife on me. I don't know where I will be.
All right, y'all, welcome back. That was Pastor Mike Jr. with the song is called I Got It, and I played that because I happen to know that that's one of Doc's jams, and I heard it, I heard him listening to it one day, and then all of a sudden I was hooked, and I thought that that's an appropriate song for the conversation that we're having tonight. So welcome back. You're listening to the V2V podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Marcy, and I'm joined tonight with my mentor, colleague, sensei, whatever you want to call him, the one and the only, Dr. Will Moreland. And we've been talking about transformation. And the subject of the show tonight was defying the odds. And Doc has managed to go from being born in Compton into a system of poverty, single mother, and the expectations for his life, as with many young Black males, is death or jail by the time they're 20. And so we've invested the first portion of the show really talking about how was he able to make that transformation. And so before the break, we talked about the four P's, and he talked about the fact that you have to do a couple of things in order to move this transformation forward. He said, first, you got to make the choice to do something different. And then he said, you got to commit to experiencing different, to being different, doing different. And then he said what was helpful for him was in his transformation, he read a lot of books. And one of the books he read was by Reginald F. Lewis called Why Should White Guys Have All the Fun? And he used the experiences that Reginald shared and the habits, the daily habits he followed, to use as a model. And so he was able to do his planning and his mapping based off of this model. And one of the things that Doc has always told me and, you know, many of the speakers that are in Genius Speakers Academy is that sometimes you have to borrow belief. And sometimes you have to, like he said, you have to model. And so those are two things that when you understand that borrowing belief, because we tell ourselves certain stories, but we're always going to tell ourselves the story from our own perspective and our own experiences. So whatever we've already been through and whatever we already believe, that runs parallel to whatever it is we're trying to tell ourselves. And so you have to go outside of yourself if you're trying to download new information and get new information. So, Doc, let's talk a little bit about the stories that we tell ourselves and the narratives that we create. And I know you have some thoughts about the story that we tell ourselves and what that means and what that does. Can you expand on that?
Certainly. So when we think about a lot of people determine how they live today by what they experienced yesterday. And so a lot of people today may say, the reason why I live like this is because yesterday I didn't have my father in my life, or yesterday, and when I say yesterday, I mean the history, the past. Yesterday, I didn't have my father in my life. Yesterday, my wife divorced me. Yesterday, my husband divorced me. Yesterday, my mom didn't like me. Yesterday, my teacher called me stupid. But what we don't realize is that our past, our history, is all made up by us. Meaning, Marcy, when I'm telling you about what I perceive to be my history, you don't know my history unless I tell you my history. And so whatever event has happened in my life, the only perspective that you're going to have about that event is the perspective that I give you. So, for instance, when someone says, the day I got a divorce, that was the worst day of my life. Well, that's how they're perceiving it. And that's the perception that you're going to get, that that was the worst day of their life. And so when I'm working with a lot of my clients and we're working through how we're going to change our story so we can transform our life, I always get them to reframe the story. Because once again, it's still all made up. It's literally all made up. Was that really the worst day of your life? And when they start to think about it, they say, well, I guess, you know what, I guess that wasn't actually the worst day of my life. And I said, and even if you do say that was the worst day of your life, let's see if we can grapple some positive out of that day. So you say getting a divorce was the worst day of your life. Well, let's look at maybe some lessons that you learned from that event. Were there any lessons you learned from that event? And I'll give you, even make it more transparent and bring it home to me. So when I was younger, I got molested. And so when I think about being molested, that could have been the worst day of my life. But as I begin to go over it, I begin to ask myself, okay, Will, what was the lessons you learned? Well, to free myself from that event and to reconstruct that story, instead of that being the worst day of my life, it became one of the best days of my life, because that's when I learned the power of forgiveness. And I learned the power of forgiveness. It wasn't about forgiving the other person to free them, but it was forgiving that person to free myself. Because as long as I held on to animosity, as long as I held on to hatred toward that individual, it wasn't doing anything to that individual. It was doing something to me. And so instead of that being the worst day of my life, it became one of the most powerful days of my life, because if I could forgive that individual for that heinous act, then I could pretty much forgive Marcy for lying on me. I could pretty much forgive Barbara for disappointing me. See, I could now activate the power of forgiveness so quickly, because now nothing at this point anybody does to me is going to probably be as horrific as that situation was. And so I got from that situation the power of forgiveness. And so when you're telling yourself these stories, like, you know, I'll meet somebody and I'll say, tell me a little bit about yourself. And they'll say, well, I'm a divorced mom of three. And I say, let me ask you something. How long you been divorced? Well, I've been divorced now for 15 years. Well, you just met me. I'm just curious as to why you would introduce yourself, because you are single as much as you are divorced. So why would you introduce yourself as divorced rather than introducing yourself as single? And every time I ask that question, people always stop and they say, man, you're right. I've been identifying myself from a painful past, and I keep rehashing this story. It's like when you have a scab on your skin and you just keep picking at it. Well, the longer you pick at it, the longer what? It takes to heal. So whatever you've went through in life, if you have the wrong perspective of it, it's going to take a long time to heal. And for many people, you talked about being stuck. That's why they're stuck. It's because of their perspective. And this is not to, you know, this is not to turn this into anything religious, but I read a scripture, and the scripture said concerning Jesus, by his stripes we are healed. By his stripes we are healed. So he got the stripes and we got the healing. And the thought came to me one day that everything that I've been through that I considered negative wasn't for me. It happened to me, but it wasn't about me. It wasn't for me. It was for the thousands of people that on this life journey that I was going to connect with that's had pain in their life. So now I would be able to have empathy. And so everything that Will has went through, I don't know how many young men I've talked to. I don't know how many grown men I've talked to that have been molested in life, that when they talk to me, that I was able to relate, that I was able to show empathy, and I was able to share the same story I just shared with your audience. That became one of the most powerful days in my life, because that's when I learned the power of forgiveness. And so everything that's happened to me, being going to jail, I can now go into jails and talk to other prisoners and let them know, this doesn't have to be your last destination. This doesn't have to be the end of your story. We can turn the page and add some other pages to it. and add a different ending to it. That's all because of what I've been through. You know, losing my friend, one of the worst days of my life, to see my friend die in front of me. But what that day did was it gave me an appreciation for life. It makes me want to live life every single day to the fullest, because I understand that life can be taken away from us. And so I've tried to do this in every aspect of my life that I thought was a negative situation. I went back and said, okay, what's the lesson? What can I take in my future that's going to benefit me? And so when we talk about reconstructing our story, I ask myself and I ask my clients, what are we going to bring into the present? And we're only going to bring something into the present if it can empower us for our future. So when I think about my past, the only thing I'm bringing from my past are things that's going to benefit me now, things that are going to empower me now. If it's not going to empower me, if it's not going to benefit me, I'm not going to bring it with me to my present, because it's not going to help me shape my future.
Right, and I can testify to that, and how you give that. That's a gift. I really feel like it's a gift that you give to your clients. When you and I first started working together, and I was sharing with you, I think I shared with you a picture of me at like 380-something pounds, and I remember you saying, "Who is that? Is that a cousin?" Or like, I can see a resemblance. And I was like, "No, that's me." And the look on your face, like, I'll never forget that. And I remember right then and there, you said to me, that's your competitive advantage. That's what we're going to build your message on. And I'm like, in my head, thinking, oh, hell no, I'm not talking about that. Uh-uh. Like, I wanted to let that not have existed. I didn't want to talk about it. I never wanted anybody to see those pictures. And then the same thing happened with the domestic violence. When that happened, like, I never wanted anybody to see those pictures. But to your point, the things that have happened to us isn't necessarily for us. And I think of the domestic violence especially, and that forgiveness piece is huge, and understanding that it does, sometimes what we've been through does prepare us to serve in ways that we never dreamed that we would serve. And this wasn't about serving a broad audience, but when my own daughter was facing some challenges with someone that she was dating, I was able to advise her and lead her and guide her in a way as a survivor and someone who's educated about domestic violence and the cycles of abuse. I was able to better advise her on that relationship. So instead of advising her as her mother, I was able to advise her from a completely different standpoint, because I had a different level of understanding, and my empathy was different. My compassion for what she was going through was different. So one of the things that we always, you tell all of the clients, and I know we talk about this in Genius Speakers Academy a lot, is that our message is our medicine. And so one of the things you've been able to do, and you help a lot of the speakers and the consultants in the group do, is to what we call monetize the message, or monetize the mess into the message, because you say the message, your message is someone's medicine. So let's talk about like some of the things that you do with clients that helps them use some of these experiences as they grow through them to actually build from and be able to, in some cases, monetize from it.
So there's another scripture that I love. It's Jesus talking to Peter, and he says, Peter, Satan is trying to destroy you, and we can use Satan as a synonym for life. Life is trying to destroy you. And he says, but Peter, when you have strengthened yourself, or when you've overcome, go back and strengthen the brethren. Go back and strengthen the brethren. And that's what I've tried to do in my life. Once I learned how to look at everything with a different perspective, I now try to reach back and help other people do the same. So when we talk about our academy students, where I work with speakers and authors and consultants and other leaders, and certainly this is not for everybody, but if you feel as though if you have a mission now, like for you, going through domestic violence, now you have a mission. You want, with your foundation, 9 Seconds, you want to empower other women, and you want to educate the community at large about what's going on in that situation. There's every 9 seconds, there's another domestic violence occurrence. And so now you have a mission. And so you have a mission. Someone else you may have a message that you want to get out into the world, or you may have a method. You know how to do something very well. You may know how to potty train infants in 3 months, which every mom and dad would fall in love with you because you showed them this method. Well, I believe that if you're helping people in that manner, you can make an impact and you can make an income at the same time. And so for me, I've been able to take my story and literally travel all around the world, 50 plus different countries, and share my story and be compensated for it. And so if you're that person who says, yeah, I do have a mission, I do have a method, I do have a message that I want to get out to the masses, then that's what the Academy is about. And so one of my giftings, you talked about it earlier, that's just one of my giftings. You have some people who play the piano, you have some people who sing, you have some people who can bake, you have some people who can cook, you have some people that can make you laugh. My genius is in helping people get clarity and then structuring out a business for them that will help them create a lifestyle that they love.
And there's something that happens too. I remember when I was writing Journey to Find Your Butterfly Potential, which was the first book, and I remember you telling me, is before I'd ever started, I hadn't even put a word on a piece of paper, and you said, you're going to hit a wall, because I was telling my story. And when we talk about that clarity piece, and sure enough, I did hit the wall, and I remember just sitting in the floor of my office, and I had pictures from my past, like, all around me, and I'm sobbing at looking at some of these photographs. And it wasn't necessarily because they were sad times, but it stirred something up and it triggered some things. And so one of the things that I saw was a picture of one of my girls, extremely overweight, as like, I think she was maybe 6 or so in the picture. And I was sobbing because I knew at that point I had lost 200 pounds. But I knew that the struggles that my girls had with their weight was my fault. It was my fault. And that was a hard, hard, hard thing for me to be able to share. And so being able to get that clarity, and when you talk about your gift to be able to walk people through what that's like, I want them to understand the type of healing that happens. And I talk with my author coaching clients all the time about the healing that happens when you can start telling your story. So can you give some ideas of how you're able to help them kind of skip, not really skip over the pain, because they have to feel the pain at some point, but how you get them kind of through that to actually push the product out?
Well, I've realized through my own journey that many of us never deal with what's dealing with us. We just learn to kind of press through in life. But what I found out through therapy and through living life, healing is a process. Grieving is a process. The stages of grieving, the stages of healing. But many of us, we skip through those stages. And so when it comes to talking about it, when it comes to writing about it, when it comes to sharing, what happens is you realize, oh, I really didn't take out the trash. I just put it in a closet in my house, and we just don't open up that door. But then one day, you're forced to open up that door. And now all of that trash that's been in there for years, those eggshells, that meat, that lettuce, is like, you know, maggots. And now we got to deal with it. We got to address it. And so in addressing it, I know, like I was able to tell you, I knew that was going to happen because 95% of people who go through things don't deal with it. They just go through it. I realized deep into my 30s that I had never grieved the death of my grandmother. A lot of that was, once again, environment. My grandmother died when I was 12, and they told me, big boys don't cry. Big boys don't cry. So here, the lady that meant the most to me is lying in this casket, and the people, they meant well, but they shut off the stage of me grieving, the stage of, and so I realized at 30-something years old, I never grieved the death of my grandmother. I never grieved the death of my best friend dying in front of me. And so there was a lot of these occurrences in my life that I realized, man, I had really never dealt with them. I kind of put them all in this closet, and just kind of pushed through life. And so when I'm working with our clients, it's not that we want you to forget anything. It's not that we want you to bypass anything or look anything over. We want you to actually deal with it. And that dealing with process may mean that you need to stop working on the book project and get into therapy. It may mean that you may have to take a month or so to really deal with some unresolved issues in your life, which is all going to be beneficial because during that coaching process, we're going to teach you how to have a different perspective. Like I said earlier, we're not going to look at everything as a negative. You know, there's another proverb that talks about in everything give thanks. In everything give thanks. And you may be saying, well, wait a minute. How can I give thanks for this? This was horrific. Will, how can you give thanks about being molested? How can you find any good in that? And once again, for me, the overall arching good was that I learned how to forgive. And so I'm a person that doesn't hold grudges. I can forgive very easily and move on with my life. It doesn't mean that it didn't hurt. It doesn't mean I don't feel it. It doesn't mean that I wasn't impacted by it, but I don't let it hold me. I don't let it grasp me. It's people that are still mad at people from 20 years ago, 40 years ago, and it's not doing anything to the other person they're mad at. It's doing something to them. And so when you understand about forgiveness is not about the other person. Forgiveness is for you. And so when I'm working with my clients, we take them through these different stages and these different processes to help them reprogram their mind and help them reformat their stories that they're telling themselves.
Yeah, I remember when I was in therapy after my domestic violence, and I was sitting in my therapist's office, and we were working on, she had me read a book called Dance of Anger, and then she had me read a book called Codependent No More. And so we were really working on how did I feel about what had happened to me with the abuse. And so I was, you know, sharing some thoughts with the therapist, and all of a sudden she kind of, and then she had me, you know, do that exercise where you write the letter and to the person, but you're not going to send it and da 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 da. Well, apparently my letter was not bitter enough for her taste. And she said to me, she said, so do you feel like you deserve what happened to you? I was like, no, why would you say that? And she said, well, in listening to your letter, you just don't seem angry enough. You just don't seem angry enough. I said, what? And this was probably maybe 6 months after it happened, 5 or 6 months after the incident had happened. And I was like, what? What are you talking about? She said, well, you just don't seem, you know, it's almost like you feel like you deserved what happened because you're not angry, and I would expect that you would be more angry. And I said to her, I said, me sitting here seething and crying and being angry and resentful to him hurts me. And meanwhile, he's out there hitting the clubs, drinking, partying, having fun, living his life. But I'm sitting in here on your couch angry and letting it eat me up inside. I was like, make that make sense. It doesn't make any sense to me. So I choose not to stay angry. It doesn't mean that I want to associate with that person or that I agree with what happened. But I say all that to say that was my response to her. But I didn't even understand at that point that that was a point of forgiveness. I just knew that I couldn't stay attached to the anger because the anger kept me attached to him. And I didn't want to be attached to my abuser. And so I think it was when I was working on the book and some other things and we were kind of talking about that process, that was one of the things that I learned from you, is that that is the process of forgiveness. And a lot of times people hear us say, oh, forgiveness isn't about you, about the other person, it's about you, but they don't understand what that really looks like in real life. It sounds cliche and it sounds like, yeah, okay, I heard everybody say that, but yeah, you try and forgive. And forgiveness isn't easy, but when you understand that you truly are freeing yourself from being bound to those pain points, it really definitely is a very, very powerful thing. So I'm glad you brought up the forgiveness aspect of it. Or the Genius Speakers Academy. So I want to talk, so we've talked about the past, we talked about how you kind of got through some of that. So now I want to talk about some of the incredible stuff that you're doing, that we're doing, things that we're working on with the Speakers Academy, some of I really want to talk also about the work that you're doing in diversity with some city governments and some schools and some corporations. So I don't really care where you start, but if you can kind of bring people into where you are now, because I think they have a good grasp on where you were and how you transformed your life. So I want to talk now about where you are, what you're doing, and how you're serving now.
Awesome. So a couple of years ago, I really took some time to really think about how I wanted to live the rest of my life and how I wanted to serve out the rest of my life. And I think we all go through these phases in life where I call, for many of us, the first phase is struggle, and you struggle till you get to sustainment. And then once you get to sustainment, you're reaching for success. And many people think that success is the apex of life. But what I found out after examining my own life, after working with and talking with so many highly successful people, that there's another level beyond success, and that's significance. And so when we look at success, I look at success as personal. What you've accomplished, what you drive, how you live, where you how you dress and all that type, that's all personal. That's all you and all the accolades you can get and achieve, and that's all wonderful, and that's definitely a part of it. But I think ultimately the place you want to get to is significance, and significance is what you do for other people, the imprint that you make on their life, the impact that you make on their life. And so a couple of years ago, I was really thinking about this. How do I want to invest the rest of my life? We don't know how much time we have here on this earth, but I wanted to make sure that I made some meaningful impact. And so I really began to turn my focus toward speakers and authors and consultants and leaders, once again, individuals that feel as though they have a mission, they have a message, and they have a method that they want to get to the masses. And I've been very fortunate in my business, in my speaking business, to reach you know, what I would call the apex. When I look at some of the things that I wanted to accomplish inside the speaking arena, I did that. And so there was nothing more really that I wanted to accomplish inside the speaking arena. And the more I started to think about it, my heart began to turn to supporting other people. And that's when I made a commitment to our Speakers Academy, GU Speakers Academy. I'm on a mission to empower 5,000 speakers, authors, and consultants and leaders to help them amplify their voice and to help them build their brand and build their business and to build their bank account. And so we have a certification program where when you come into the certification, we focus on helping you build a healthy, sustainable business. If you're going to make impact in this world, it starts off with a strong foundation. If you just think about the story of the three little pigs and the wolf that came by, the house that was able to stand was the house that had a strong foundation. And so here globally, we understand that we just came out of a pandemic or coming out of a pandemic. And for those who had a strong foundation in their business, they were able to weather the pandemic. So in our academy, that's what we focus a lot on, is building a strong business foundation in your business. So I'm really excited about that. And then I have a consulting company, Moreland Training and Associates, where we're doing some amazing work. And I really believe there's some cutting edge work in the area of diversity, equity, and inclusion. Several years ago, our company was named the top diversity company here in Arizona. And I believe a lot of that just comes from the shared experiences between the team, me joining the military, being able to travel the world and live in 5 different countries and visit and work in 50 plus different countries, really gives us a very unique perspective into diversity and the power of diversity, equity, and inclusion. And so we're now partnering, and I tell all of our partners, because I'm really committed to significance, we're not just trying to check off the box. We're not just trying to come in and check off your diversity box. If you really want some true transformation and you really want to see true transformation inside your organization and create a diverse, inclusive, and equity culture in your company, then we want to work with you, we want to team with you, and we want to support you in reaching that mission. So those are the major things that I'm really committed to right now that really wake me up every morning, that keep me up at night, thinking about how can we serve our academy students better, and then how can we serve our diversity partners better in helping them fulfill their missions and build cultures of inclusion. And so in summary, that's what I'm focused on now. That's what has me really excited. This is the work I truly believe I'll be doing until my number is up, and I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, and you talk about being able to really continue to serve, and you know, we've invested a lot of time over this past year figuring, like you said, how can we add more value to the clients that are associated with the Speakers Academy. And talk a little bit about the collaboration that we just kicked off this past week.
So we just kicked off a collaboration with Black Speakers Network. They're the largest association of speakers of color. And in kicking off that collaboration, one of the things that I wanted to do is be a model for other businesses in our community that is not about competition, but it's about collaboration. And if you really want to do some amazing work is not done by any individual, is done by a lot of committed individual. And so the founder of BSN, Dr. Brian Oles, who is also committed to supporting speakers of color, I saw what their organization was doing in terms of the training that they were providing. I saw that We were dealing with the same client, but we were supporting those clients in different ways. And I just felt that it would be a great collaboration. And so I reached out to him because we have our certification program where we certify speakers and authors and consultants and leaders to becoming genius speakers. And so we have our certification, which is something that BSN does not do. And so we thought it would be a marriage made in heaven if our organizations came together to support speakers of color. So I'm real excited about that partnership, and we're looking for some great things to come out of it as we work together here in the present and future.
Yeah, and you know, just all of the different trainings, and I know that I shared it in your Genius Nation group and as well as on my page and social media and things like that, but for those of you who, like I said, if you don't know all of the value, like we couldn't even, there's no way I could dive in the time that we have for the show and really give you a full perspective of all of the things that Dr. Willow's doing, has done, continues to do in the name of service, and really truly providing you with tools and strategies and information that's going to allow you to excel personally and professionally. And I think sometimes with a lot of leaders, they tend to get kind of caught up in the, oh, well, it's just about the business, it's just about the numbers. And I remember when I first met you, I was surprised at your interest in who I was as a human being. And I'll tell the story real quick, but and I don't even know if you remember this, but I was at the branding seminar and I had left a coffee mug there. And we had all turned in our business cards that had our contact information on to you. And you actually followed up with me and said, hey, I think maybe you left this. I'd like to return it. And I remember telling you, like, oh, no, that's okay. Like, you don't have to do that. But the day that, but you insisted, and the day that we did, I went to pick that up from you. I met you at a Starbucks, and instead of just handing me the mug like I would have expected, and which is what I was prepared for, you said to me, "Have a seat," and I was like, "Why? Why do I need to sit down? I just came to get my coffee mug," and you invested a considerable amount of time talking to me, and that was the day that I showed you that picture of me being 386 pounds. And by the time I walked out of interaction with you, you had created for me a framework for what I could do. Now, it took me a long time to catch up and believe that I was capable of that, and I had what I needed and I was qualified and all those things to do all the things that you told me that I could do and I really could do and I really was capable of doing. But again, I had to believe it because I was telling myself a different story. And so I guess I'm saying all that to say is that when people engage with you, it's not just, they're not just another number. They're not just something that goes towards the bottom line. And so when they do business with you, I've watched you with clients. I've got my own personal testimonies about how you really, truly care about the person. And I know you have a philosophy about who you will and won't work with. Do you want to share that?
Well, I had a mentor, Dr. Miles Monroe, and he was famous for a quote he would always say. He would say that the most wealthiest place on the planet was the graveyard, because in the graveyard was dreams that died, the songs that were never sung, books that was never written, because the writers of those songs and the writers of those books and the brilliance all died in individuals. And so I understand that every individual that is born is a gift to the world. And what do you give? What do you do with a gift? You give gifts. And so one of my missions is whenever I come into contact with someone is to help them identify their gift, because the Bible says your gift will make room for you, not your education, not your passion, but your gift. And if I can help people, I call your gift your genius. If I can help people identify their genius and deploy that genius, humanity is humanity's savior. A dog can't save humanity. A bear can't save humanity. Humans come up with cures. Humans come up with technology. So humanity is the savior of humanity. But if that humanity is in a depressed state, if that humanity is in a state of disbelief, then they're never going to make the impact. They're never going to make the contribution that they need to make in life. And so I take it as my mission, if I feel as though someone's not living out their genius potential, it's my duty, it's my mission to help them identify that genius so they can deploy it, because they're somebody's medicine. Somebody's waiting to be encouraged by you. Someone's waiting to be inspired by you. Someone's waiting to be impacted by you. If you think about all the best times that have ever happened in your life, it probably was a human connected to it. And so I want humans to be their best at all times. And so that's my heartthrob. That's my mission, is to just help humans become the best versions of themselves, because when we become the best versions of ourselves, we create a better world. And because I had some disruptors in my life and I see what happened when my life got disrupted, I just try to pass it on. What do they say? Pass it on. I just try to pass it on and try to be a disruptor in someone else's life.
Well, you definitely disrupted mine that day in that Starbucks. I'm telling you one thing, Nug, life has never been the same since. And I'll be probably eternally grateful for, you know, that conversation and your willingness to just invest in some lady that came to some seminar and left a coffee mug. Like, who does that? And I remember thinking when I walked out of there that day, like, oh my gosh, I have to do this. I have to make this stuff happen. I have to figure this out, because you had just invested, I think by that point, it was a couple hours for sure, helping me map this out. And so I felt like I walked out of there with all this information and all of these tools and so many ideas and all of these things, but I felt like I owed it to you. And so for me, I've always been one of those people who I will serve other people before I would serve myself. And so I probably would have given up a long time ago. I probably, if it was just left up to me and there was no accountability in my mind to you, I probably never would have wrote that first book, which means the other 11 or 12 or however many I've written since then would have never happened, and the speaking would have never happened, and the work with the domestic violence and the foundation and all of these other things would have never happened had you not decided at some point that you wanted to be of service and be of significance and be able to serve other people. And so I'm officially thanking you. I know I have over the years, but officially here on V2V Podcast, thanking you for doing all of the things that you do and serving in the way that you serve. So we definitely appreciate you. What final thoughts do you have? Anything that you want to say to inspire somebody or encourage anyone?
Well, I just want everybody to look at this. Look at this evening, everything that Marcy just shared, and in terms of me making a deposit into her, but look at what has come, 12, 13 books, a movie script, an organization. And now think about if you just begin to think about the best of humanity, if you look at your next door neighbor and look at the person in the cubicle and believe the best about them, believe the best about them, believe that there's more inside of them, that there's more than meets the eye. And just think about if all of us approach each other with that mindset, that there's a better version of you, no matter what you're doing, there's a better version of you inside of you. And if I could be a spark, if I can be a catalyst, if I could be a bridge, if I can be a doorway, a pathway to help you explore that. Look at now all the people that you are serving and all the authors that you are helping. It's a ripple effect. It's a ripple effect when we invest in each other, because once again, humanity is humanity's savior. Trees can't save us. Birds can't save us. We're to save ourselves. And the more we begin to understand that and place a value on each other with that perspective, you won't look at an individual like they're not worthy of living anymore. You won't look at an individual as they don't have any contribution. If everybody judged me off of the first 20 years of my life, there's no way I could be doing what I'm doing today. But because that judge, he says, man, I see something different in you. Whether Corey knew it or not, I don't know what made Corey. There were other gentlemen in there that day that he could have asked that question. Maybe he did ask them that. I don't know. Sergeant Major Bass, he could have let me go back to Compton. But he decided to be a disruptor. He decided to believe in my humanity. He decided to believe that there was a better will on the inside of me. And so now, you know, when he sees everything that I'm doing, he has a big part in that. He can look and say, man, if I would have sent that kid back to Compton, maybe there is no Dr. Will. Maybe there is no Genius Speakers Network. Maybe there is no Genius Speakers Academy. Maybe there is e-books. Maybe there is, you know, no Titan Award for this guy. And so I'm ever indebted to the disruptors in my life, and I'm committed to being a disruptor for other people in their lives.
Wow. I think that's a great way to end the show tonight. You guys, if you want to connect with Dr. Will, there's a Facebook group called Genius Nation. That's probably the easiest and quickest way to connect with him. On Instagram, he's under, I believe, Dr. Will Speaks. And if you're interested in the certification program or Genius Speakers Academy, you can go to his website, geniusspeakercertification.com. And if you're interested in joining, inbox me, and I'll give you a code that you can use to save some money off of your registration. So that's it for tonight, guys. Thank you, Dr. Will. I appreciate you for joining and sharing. And to you all, you know I always say that survival is a responsibility, and every week that rings true. I'm always abundantly grateful for to be in relations with so many amazing individuals. So I will see you guys back here next Tuesday night. Have a great week, everybody.
Go. Nothing can stop me. I'm all the way up. Never sleep. You got V12, I got 12 V's. Got bottles, got weed, got my. I'm all the way up. Shorty, what you want? I got what you need.